Blog Talk Radio.
Is in much less detail the podcast on a Wednesday night, September the 16th, 2015. I'm Dre, he's Jay. Week one of the NFL season in the books, 2015 officially underway. Jason, as always, a lot of crazy developments in the league. Week one always sees some things you don't expect to see, some things you do expect to see. And for the purposes of our picks, it starts off with you having a slightly better week than me. Our five games we differed on, you took three of them, and of course, most importantly, your lock of the week comes through, and mine completely dissolves into a pile of flaming shit.
Yes, we're quickly finding out that the lock of the week experiment the second time is going about as well so far as the first time. Because it's not just about picking the games, it's about picking the one that you are so sure is going to come through. And yes, I ended up winning mine, but by no means was that an easy one with that Green Bay covering the 6.5 over the Bears. That was not an easy blowout win for Green Bay like we both kind of thought it would be. I mean, the Bears really did hang around. I think they kind of showed you what they're going to look like in a more scaled down, more vanilla looking offense with John Fox, but they still can't stop anybody. So that's great. Yeah. You can shorten the game as much as you want. This just means that you're going to lose games, you know, 24-17 instead of losing games, you know, 42-24.
Now, that game, did you watch that one or parts of it?
I watched enough football this weekend. I was actually on my way home from vacation on Sunday and watched half or so of the game and listened to the rest of it on the radio on my way home from my trip. So, yeah, I was able to catch the overall. You know, I got the gist of it. I understood what was happening. But the Bears definitely hung around in that game.
Yeah, that one I don't have any reference on. I can break down seven games in their entirety that I got to watch all of them this weekend. But that's one of the ones that I did not get a chance to catch the highlights. I know the Bears stayed close. That's all I know about
that.
Yeah,
the main issue was they were down in the fourth quarter. They were right at the goal line, went for it on a fourth down, failed. Packers had to punt. Then the Bears got the ball back, and Cutler tried to hit Martellus Bennett over the middle on just like a real quick hitter. And you go back, you watch the replay. I mean, Clay Matthews was all over this play from the snap. I mean, he was basically from the snap, just dead run right in front of Martellus Bennett. Jay Cutler never saw him. And, of course, it turns into be sort of the game-changing play. And the Packers are able to just sort of nurse that lead through the fourth quarter. But yeah, it was a close game, but I called it a lock I sweated that one out.
Well, it came through. That's all that counts.
It definitely came through. So it looks like it's a circle and a check mark or a circle and an underline or whatever you want to call it on the score sheet. But, your lock of the week.
Oh my God.
Was that the biggest blowout of the week?
Of course it was. Because I called it a lock the other way. Of course it was. 35-7 at the half.
Yeah, we completely misread the Jameis Winston-Marcus Mariota dynamic, apparently.
I completely misread it. I can't speak for anybody else. I ranted and raved and shouted at the top of my lungs that Jameis Winston was ready for the NFL based on three or four plays that I saw in preseason, and Marcus Mariota was complete garbage, and the Titans were complete garbage, and until they proved otherwise, I was going to pick against them, and I was just so confident that the Buccaneers were going to come through and knock around Mariota, not thinking about the fact that Tampa is still running the Lovey 2, the Tampa 2, and for that particular type of quarterback with not much experience, but with athleticism and mobility, that's probably a bad defense to play against him because it gives him such a cushion. It gives him so much room to operate and do the things that he wants to do. It would have been much better off if it was a Rex Ryan type of defense or, Todd Bowles, some defense that just gets after you and busts you in the fucking mouth. That's not what the Buccaneers do. That's completely my fault for misreading that. And, boy, I couldn't have possibly been more wrong on that one.
Well, I mean, we both lost the pick.
Yeah.
But you really lost
but
the pick.
But I was the one that screamed, this is my lock. There is no chance.
So I got to ask you, because this is a concept that we rolled out. Did you get cute a little bit? Now
yes.
That you look back in retrospect, were there other games that you were more sure of that you just didn't want to be? Did you outsmart yourself?
Well, not. I didn't pass over other blowouts just to take that one. That legitimately, in my little completely unscientific breakdown and score predictions, was my biggest prediction. I thought that was going to be Tampa 31-3. I thought Tennessee was just not even going to show up. I just completely misread it.
Yeah, and Marcus Mariota's on his way to the Hall of Fame, didn't you know?
Yes, he's the greatest rookie quarterback of all time.
The greatest debut game since Fran Tarkenton.
Well,
that
this
was
an
interesting stat. First quarterback in 54 years to throw four touchdowns in his NFL debut. Or first
got them all in
as a rookie.
Got them all in the first half. Unbelievable.
If he had done it on a broken leg, he would have had a Donovan McNabb half.
Oh, no, I'd have to be playing against him in fantasy for that.
You'd have to be playing against me with that quarterback in fantasy. That's the stipulation, okay.
So this game is one of the ones that I've watched so I can break it down. Not that there's much to break down, but since I'm the one that said this
at the end of the day, we're talking about two completely shit teams by the end of the season.
Oh, sure.
We might as well give them their due.
Right, exactly.
Let's get this out of the way.
All right, Titans, here's your big spotlight. You're the first game the first game I break down in detail. We talked about the Packers and Bears first, but the big breakdown of this one goes like this. Mariota's first real throw, it was a bullet to the tight end Delanie Walker. So he showed me first right off the bat, nice gun. I didn't know he had that. I don't watch college football, so I didn't watch Oregon, so I didn't know he had a gun on him. The second throw was this read option flick to Kendall Wright, who sprints past everybody for 52 yards because Tampa's in that Lovey 2 where they've got so many people back there in zone waiting for this big throw over the top, which never comes because they just go right underneath and slice right through you and run right to the end zone completely untouched.
Yeah, that's one of the highlights that I saw. It's amazing that you get a receiver in stride against that cover two, and you just split that. You just pull that zipper like a defense, like a zipper. That thing was. Yeah, that wasn't like cover zero, because if you look at the replay, he catches the ball. There's three dudes in the screen with him, but they're all reacting where he's just hit, boom, perfectly in stride, and doesn't have to slow down and nothing, just right through all these guys, and they're all just, whiffing at air. I mean, if that ball's a little underthrown, or, if that ball's not right in stride, somebody's going to come up and make a tackle.
So if that wasn't perfect enough, Jameis Winston's first throw on 3rd and 3 is this weak-ass out route that got jumped underneath by Cody Sensabaugh all the way for a pick six. And all of a sudden it's 14-0, and it's like, oh, dear God,
I'm watching on the phone. I'm watching the scores on my phone, and I see that real quick is 14-0 Tennessee. 10, I'm just like, oh, no. That's Andre's lock of the week.
Of course it is. I'm probably going 0-17 on this lock thing. I'm warning you right now. Winston's next throw was to nobody. And there was a third down blitz that just spooked him into some meaningless scramble where he didn't get anywhere near the first down. So right off the bat, he looked like the rookie that didn't know what he was doing, and Mariota looked like the veteran. Tampa Bay D just didn't know what was going on. The next drive, Mariota gets them down the field, no problem. 21-0. Jameis really seems to hate defenders in his face, which is, of course, all quarterbacks do, but it really made him make some bad choices. So he had that touchdown to Austin Seferian Jenkins. That was more scrambling from pressure, and the linebacker couldn't keep up with the tight end. I wasn't impressed by that score. On the other side, big pressure around Mariota, and he didn't seem like he noticed or cared. Now, he took some sacks. There's such thing as being too calm in the pocket, but just looking at their demeanors, Mariota seemed a lot more comfortable and calm, and Winston seemed a lot more spooked and scared. Jameis was starting to scramble and run when somebody was in his face. That's a bad sign for someone who's not overly fast. And Tampa Bay's defense on the other side was just getting fooled by everything, read option shit, getting blocked and run over in the open field. And when Tennessee threw, Tampa's not covering anyone in that Tampa 2, and they're not tackling. Basically, everything you could do wrong on defense, the Buccaneers were doing wrong. Not to take away from Mariota and the Titans, but everything you could do wrong, Tampa Bay definitely was doing wrong. And then on the radio side, I listened to the Titans radio guy Mike Keith relay his conversation with Titans coach Ken Whisenhunt, who said that what he was installing with Mariota using his mobility was a lot of read option and run pass options like he did with Cordell Stewart back with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And you see it. You see it when you hear that, and then you kind of look and pay attention to, yeah, there's a lot of slash going on out there. There's a little bit of that. So now, slash 1-0 rings, let's keep that in mind. But he did have some success with that stuff in the NFL. So maybe there's a lot more in store for Mariota and the Titans than I could have ever thought there was.
Well, and that's your home. That's your, it's not like your team, but that's the team that you get the most exposure to. They could still only win 4 or 5 games this year, but you never know. Everybody who's 1-0, half the league right now, they're riding high. They've got their aspirations, and they're feeling great. And then all those, and everybody else, I mean, you're already starting to hear the rumblings about must-win games. It's crazy. It's so crazy.
Chuck Pagano's getting fired tomorrow, right?
It's so crazy with a 60. Oh, God. Yeah. It's so crazy with a 16-game schedule, just how overblown it gets. And now you see, Seattle going to Green Bay on Sunday night. Well, Seattle drops that. Now they're 0-2. And, we got to go get Cam Chancellor back. We better get the limo and drive it up to his house and just give him bags of cash to come back, because that's the answer,
It sure makes it seem like it's the answer when it's his replacement getting beaten badly for the game-tying score.
Absolutely. Forgetting the fact that Seattle also, they scored a boatload of points in that game. They scored 31 points and somehow found a way to lose that game to the Rams. Which I had that one, by the way.
You did?
Thank you. My good calls were good. My bad calls were not really good this week, but the good ones were good. The pick I lost, but I still feel vindicated somewhat about, is still the most polarizing game for us, was that Baltimore-Denver game. But I still can. Peyton's just done.
He certainly doesn't look good.
There were no offensive touchdowns scored in that game. So Baltimore's offense is a wreck. Denver's offense is a wreck. The only thing that I came out in that game was that Denver's defense is still legit, which is really sad, considering that Peyton cannot go over the top on anybody. You saw Baltimore just creeping up into the passing lanes, getting in his face. Everybody knows where Peyton's going to be. He's not scrambling or running around back there. And I fear for Peyton. I really do. I mean, I have a feeling. I don't know he makes it through this season.
Yeah, that's.
I'm not even all that certain he's going to make it through tomorrow night's game.
I was going on when I picked Denver to win the division and Peyton to have a rebound type season. I was going off of the my opinion, what I've seen the last couple of years is that Peyton Manning breaks down and degrades as the season wears on. This is kind of what he has looked like in week 15 and 16 and 17 last year, the year before that, the year before that. He's already looking like that in week one.
Yeah, in warm weather. Wait till it starts to get. Wait till the bones start to creak a little bit, and October starts to settle in. And
I don't know how much worse it can get.
Yeah, that was. Although they won, and I lost that pick, and you won that pick, I still. Maybe I'm not so right about Baltimore. Yeah, I'm starting to come around your way of thinking a little bit more about Baltimore, but I definitely feel like I had the right read on the Broncos. That was a really... Did you watch that game? It was a hard game to watch.
I didn't watch any of that, probably on purpose.
That was the afternoon game here, so I did get to see a majority of that game, and it was hard football to watch. It wasn't like low-scoring, good defensive struggle. Part of me is like, wow, is
bad
this
offense?
Great defense, or is this really lousy offense?
Yeah.
And I kept kind of defaulting back to the fact that this, wow, this is a completely depleted Baltimore offense. And Denver, with that defense behind them, just giving them chance after chance after chance, doing nothing with the ball. Just absolutely nothing. Yeah, that was a rough one to watch. Overall, just as a football fan, I don't mind a good 7-6 game if you're watching, like a little slobber knocker, watching some guys go out there and hit hard and some just really good defensive strategic football. This was not that.
No. Real quick on our plugs, if you want to jump in, of course, our number is, as always, area code 646-595-4534. You can always email the show. You will send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at IMLDDre. You can follow Jason at IMLDJTG. All of our picks are always up on the blog, and you would go to inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com to see that. And you can subscribe to this show on iTunes. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. You get this live 1 hour, and you get the after show as well. So lots, as always, happening in week one of the NFL. I brought up Chuck Pagano, whose job, if you listen to certain people, is already on the line after 1 week. And that is a game that I got. So I got to see what happened when the Colts went to Buffalo. And that was crazy because Andrew Luck and the Colts, I can argue from what I saw that was one bad game and one bad day where they were just off. Nothing was going right. There's nothing they could have really done about it. Buffalo forced them into a lot of mistakes, but to me it just seemed like they were never there. It was just one of those days where it just wasn't working for them. Indy on defense looked pretty decent at first. They blitzed and they were leaving guys open in the flat. However, Shady McCoy with nobody around complete. That was Tyrod Taylor's first completion for Buffalo was Shady in the flat because Indy was blitzing and trying to get home to Tyrod Taylor, but they forgot about LeSean McCoy. So you let Tyrod build a little confidence out of the gate. And Buffalo is going to send the whole team after Tyrod on third and long, or Buffalo's Cindy after Andrew Luck on third and long, because they know what they have. They know their defense can get after any quarterback, make them nervous. That's what they did to Andrew Luck. Buffalo's run blocking was lacking. Indy was actually doing well in that respect. So it was shocking when Tyrod aired one out, and Percy Harvin was waiting for it to catch the first touchdown of the game. So it was a defensive struggle. That was one of those games to me, like you were talking about, that both defense actually came to play in the beginning. But once Tyrod got that touchdown to Percy Harvin, I was like, oh, okay, well, now we have to respect that this guy actually can put the ball up top a little bit. There was a defensive rhythm of create a second and long blitz look, go after Andrew Luck, create a bad throw, and get Indianapolis to punt. Like I said, it just didn't seem like the Colts day. I don't know where Andre Johnson was. He was kind of missing in action all day. They got a sack on the blitz. They Luck had a nice scramble. They had a holding penalty. They had to call that. But it got ugly. Eventually, just nothing the Colts did worked out. And Tyrod Taylor's quarterback skills that I made – this is another one I made fun of and was so sure that Buffalo made a bad decision starting Tyrod Taylor. He actually has some skills. He actually made decisions where it looked like he knew exactly what he was doing out there. I color me impressed by Tyrod Taylor as well. But I just think it was one of those days. I don't believe Pagano's job should be in jeopardy. I think the Colts are going to bounce back. But this was one of those days where it was all Bills, and the Colts couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, no, we talked about this when we made the pick. You know, that Buffalo last year, Buffalo was a good team. I mean, they had a, 9-7 respectable campaign. But again, a mediocre offense with a top-rate defense. Now they bring in Rex Ryan, he's just going to just build on that defense. I mean, it's all swagger with him. It's, you know, maybe it's a lot of bluster, but he's got the guys. I mean, he made a good choice going to a team already with a great defense. So he's not going in there to reinvent anything. And they really played a good game overall against the top flight defense.
Yep.
Sorry. All of a sudden I had some like a commercial playing in my ear. Not sure if that was from our show or from the sports website I had open for scores and stats. Okay. But
we didn't hear
that.
Oh,
good. It was only in my ear, so I was actually trying to talk during that. So sorry if I sound a little confused. More than normal. The other thing we failed to recognize is that that's a tough place to go and play anyways. I mean, Buffalo does have a good home field advantage. I am anywhere close to being panicky about the Colts. They'll be fine. Andrew Luck's going to have bad days. Everybody has bad days. He still, at the end of the day, he compiled an okay day. He was like 280, two touchdowns, two picks. Not a horrible day. A lot of quarterbacks would be pretty happy with that. Half the league would be pretty happy to put up a day like that. So overall, not too worried about the Colts. We know that that's a team, dome team. They make their bones at home. You know, they win four games on the road. They can split the road record, just like most teams want to do. You know, win your home games, split on the road. Hey, that's 12.
Right.
So by no means am I at all worried about the Colts. I was impressed with the Bills, but it was just more of sort of that unknown with them. You know, we knew we were going to get really good defense, but we were both underselling, I think, on Tyrod Taylor.
Big time.
It was the unknown. You know, the only thing we knew is that we didn't know. We didn't know what to expect. And he came out, and this is what happens. You know, we learn. This is why week two is always so much fun, because what we think we learned in week one always blows up our face in week two.
Of course.
Yeah. So what were we, 10-9 as far as wins last week?
10-9?
I had 10, you had 9 as far as picks that we won.
I'm thinking 10 and 9. Like, wait a minute.
No,
19
no.
games.
Yeah, there's now 19 games a week at the NFL. Didn't you know?
So, yes, 10-9. That's correct. 9-6-1 for me, 10-5-1 for you.
Yeah. We'll take that week one anytime. And we'll take that any week, any day, no matter what.
If we can both stay over 600 all year, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, since one of us has only done that once in the last 15 years, I don't know if that's going to happen.
There are actually two guys picking against the spread that I found on the internet, on the interwebs, that we can keep up with
Right,
perhaps
we
for the year.
We totally forgot about our buddy on Yahoo.
our buddy on Yahoo, the Shutdown Corner blog guy, I totaled his picks up, and he joined me in going 9-6-1.
Oh, okay.
And the worst of the four, ironically, would be not worse by a whole lot, though, would be Michael Renner from Pro Football Focus. He's got all the numbers and the stats and the coaching, all the different grades that everybody has, and he actually wound up going 8-7. He didn't have a pickup for the Thursday night game, so that's not bad at all, 8-7. But that is the worst of us four. So we'll see if those two guys actually keep it up all year, and if I'm able to keep up with both.
Yeah, well, I'll gladly take my 10. If anything's if we've got a theme going the last 3 years that we've been doing this show now with NFL seasons, is I'm just like great week one for some reason.
I don't know why. Is there more preseason that you pay attention to, perhaps?
It must be, but I must just really have a beat. I think it's because week one, I kind of go with my gut of what I came out of the previous season with on teams. So you could just throw any of those matchups together, and I'll kind of just be able to go boom, boom, boom. It's more just like that gut instinct in week one. Now it's muddy because now there's a week. Instead of looking at a body of work from last season, now that's all kind of mixed up with what we saw in week one. And, there's already injuries. There's already quarterbacks choices. Speaking of that, that Brian Hoyer experiment lasted a long time.
What'd you say about Luck, 280, two touchdowns, two picks?
Yeah.
I don't know if any quarterbacks in Houston or Cleveland are going to equal that outing this entire year. 280 and two touchdowns.
Exactly.
I don't know if any of them are going to get to that.
So Hoyer just sucks up the joint for Houston. I mean, granted, though, it was against Kansas City. Kansas City's a quality squad. But that just shows you the level of confidence that they had in Hoyer, that he just gets the hook. Mallett comes in, and the offense looks better. But you got to always take better, right? I mean,
you always
want better. So we both assumed this was a change in the making. Boy, did we assume this would be a change in week two?
Right.
And it looks like that's the way it's already going to go.
Well, you don't always take better. If you have confidence in your guy and you yank him because it's not his day, then you come back to your guy. Obviously, Bill O'Brien does not have confidence in his guy. Obviously, Brian Hoyer is not his guy, because you don't put your guy on the bench after 1 week. That's unbelievable. Obviously, Hoyer didn't win the job by a whole lot out of training camp if he had 1 week of a leash,
One
half of a leash, yes. So that's another one I didn't get a chance to see any highlights of, but that one you can pretty much tell what happened just by reading about it. That Hoyer came out looking like crap, and they got the old cane out and yanked him off stage, and the Ryan Mallett era has already begun. Now that might throw a wrinkle in my preseason prediction plans, that I thought Houston with Brian Hoyer was going to suck for half the season before they put in Ryan Mallett, and then that would build momentum for next year, and look out for the Texans in 2017 or 2016 or whatever. Maybe if they go to Mallett now. I don't know if I have the confidence to say that he's going to lead them anywhere, but I do agree with, I think you believe that this is the right move. Just give the kid a chance. Why are you fucking around with Brian Hoyer? You know what he is. Let's just see what Mallett has, and I definitely
Mallett
agree.
Mallett probably should have started the game just to begin with. I mean, I thought he proved enough for them. Being the in-house candidate, you would think that you are the incumbent, right? And they didn't exactly bring in a Pro Bowler. They brought in Brian Hoyer, who had a nice 8-9-10 game stretch in Cleveland last year, but they weren't bringing him in as an answer. He's a career backup. So I thought that Mallett deserved the first shot and probably deserved the first crack overall. Why not? I mean, what are you going to lose? You really think Brian Hoyer's taking you to the playoffs? Okay, great. That whatever. But that's not the way it's going to go. I don't think it would have made a difference, though, against Kansas City. Because if there's one sort of constant, it's that Kansas City is just – they're not great. They're just so boring. But they're just always there. Good defense, efficient offense, still doesn't get a touchdown to a wide receiver, but doesn't matter when you can throw two to the tight end and get one from your running back, and the offense just moves. And next thing you know, Alex Smith's got three TD passes, and he's got himself a great day. Alex Smith puts up the numbers, and that offense moves. Andy Reid's got something going, and boy, we'll really see tomorrow night with that Kansas City-Denver game at Arrowhead, because, boy, if you're the Chiefs, you got to smell some blood in the water after watching that Broncos game last week.
They will take three touchdowns every week from Alex Smith. They don't give a damn who he's throwing it to.
Yeah. So you've got that quarterback change. You've got Cleveland. Oh, the Brown fever. We were down on
football.
Them.
Ooh.
We were down on them with McClown. Boy, are we down on them with Johnny Football.
And the fact that he got that one long touchdown throw, like, okay, do you think you can pull that off every week? I mean, really? Come on.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
One guy behind the defense.
Jets is our lock of the week.
Yeah, well, I wasn't bright enough to do that. I love the Jets. I did. I predicted 24-10 on them, and they got one more touchdown than I thought. So I was pretty much right on that. But, yeah, the Browns are going nowhere fast, and we knew that. Like we said, the worst quarterback situation in all of football, going from a veteran who can't play to a young kid who can't play. I mean, basically, it's what they're doing. And either way.
And with no offensive talent around them. I mean, their best receiver is perpetually suspended.
Yeah.
They have no running game. Travis Benjamin... Okay, he's a guy.
Yeah, go far with that. Go ahead. Go see what you get out of that.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, thinking about receiver here, just popped in my brain. Did we make light of the fact that the Packers re-signed James Jones?
Well, I did. I'll wear it.
I was just thinking about that because you had a bad week making fun of guys. That's all I'm going to say.
I've had a bad life of making fun of guys.
Well,
it's pretty much how it goes.
Making football picks. Oh yeah, we just all of a sudden some guy is starting in the game and we've never heard of him and we make fun of him and he goes out. We just know he's going to stick it to us. And the Packers were going to re-sign old slow James Jones, and it was like he never missed a beat. It was like he never left town.
No, fuck it. I'll double down. He was playing the Bears. We know what the Bears do when Green Bay wide receivers walk into Soldier Field, they go, "Oh, right this way, sir. Right in the end zone. Let's escort you right
cover
through."
Zero
here it is.
I gotta tell you though, Jones was fighting for balls.
It was right. It wasn't
Rodgers
as bad
was
as
balls
as
on him. It was yes. It wasn't James Jones going up against the ice cream truck drivers.
Running free with nobody around him. No, it wasn't quite
when,
that.
When Rodgers lets go of the ball, a la Randall Cobb. In that game a couple years back for the division where he lets go of the ball and you're like, whoa, what's Rodgers doing, until you realize that Randall Cobb is the only guy on your television screen. And the only doubt is that he's so wide open that he's just going to drop it.
Right. It's still the Bears, though. It might not be as bad as it was, but it's still the Bears. So we'll see.
Still don't expect much from them.
No, well, I from James Jones, definitely, and not from the Bears, definitely.
Before we start getting into some of the other things, because this game really doesn't merit much talking about, but boy, we completely nailed the crazy things that happened in those second Monday night doubleheader games.
Yeah, 49ers.
Because that San Francisco, that Vikings-Niners game was unwatchable. Other than Carlos Hyde.
Oh, he was great.
Carlos Hyde looked great. But we've also seen, like, Eddie Royal we made fun of for looking great in that first in those doubleheader. So, but no, Carlos Hyde looked good. Like, they made the right choice moving on from Frank Gore, that there's a running attack there. But we both expect so much more from the Vikings. There's just something weird, something in the water. I don't know what it is, but that late doubleheader Monday night start is just always just whatever you whatever team you think is better, just pick the opposite. And that's exactly what we did, and that couldn't have gone any better as far as picking that game.
The 49ers were certainly fired up and emotionally ready to go. The Vikings were not ready for that. No matter how you prepare, unless your quarterback is an all-pro, I don't know if you can be prepared for what San Francisco was bringing to the table, because they were bringing it. Every drop back that Teddy Bridgewater has, people were surrounding him. And there's just nothing you could really do about that. Shitty throws all night, backed up by no running game because Adrian Peterson wasn't much of a factor. What are you going to do when you have no running game and your quarterback is getting blitzed and defenders in his face all night? There's pretty much nothing you can do about that. So San Francisco just had all the momentum.
Score 3 points. That's what you can do.
That's about what you can do, yeah. We'll see if San Francisco can keep up this one specific area with running the football that I noticed, which is going left with left tackle Joe Staley and left guard Alex Boone. They were just flattening people, and we'll see if that's something that they can keep up all year long. If they can do that with regularity, then maybe they'll be a lot better team than I thought they would. But that was where they started off. The first two runs of the game went left for real good yardage. And then they play actioned off of that and had Kaepernick wide open throwing to guys. And whatever they could do against the Vikings, they did it, because it started all with that running up, running left and went from there. So we'll see if they can keep that up.
Yeah, but the trouble for the 49ers is, all things being equal, that could all pan out and they could still be the worst team in their division.
That's true.
Because that is just the buzzsaw. That is the buzzsaw if you are in that NFC West. Remember, we used to make fun of the NFC West. That was the first division we ever had a 7-9 division winner.
That's right.
You know, we used to make fun of that division. I mean, I made fun of that division so bad that year that I predicted that they would have a sub-500 division champion. Tongue-in-cheek, by the way.
My Chicago Bears should take note, though. This is what happens when you're perpetually bad. You get higher draft picks, and you get good players, and then you become good. That's how it's supposed to work.
That is how it is supposed to go.
But if the Seahawks or the Rams or the 49ers were drafting Shea McClellan and the likes of them with their draft picks, then they wouldn't be getting good. That's not how it works.
Now, I'm assuming you then also watched the previous game to that, which was that Atlanta-Philadelphia game.
Yes, great game.
Very interesting. It was surprising, because we both expected Atlanta to just get ripped. And, we bought into a little bit of the Chip Kelly and the up-tempo, and it plays better early. I can't say much about Atlanta's defense, because they really wore down in the second half.
Yes,
that defense isn't, very good, but they are fast. I will give them that. I mean, Dan Quinn came in there, and you could instantly sense speed on that Atlanta defense. Like, they were nobody was getting behind them. You know, there were as soon as a guy would catch a ball, there were four dudes there to make a tackle, and it was like this up tempo. Defense. It was like usually they were really going toe to toe with everything that Philadelphia was trying to do. It was interesting to watch. It was like you were watching something in its early stages that farther down the road. Like, you could see that there's a vision. Like, okay, if they had better horses here and they had some better defenders, that this defensive scheme that he seems to be preaching to them, and what he brought with him from Seattle of just killing everybody with speed and getting out on the edge. You saw that in the first half. The trouble was that Philly was just kept doing the up-tempo, and they started to get a little rhythm. Matt Ryan started making some dumb throws. and they let Philadelphia, in essence, get into their groove and get back into that game just to pull it out at the very end. That was a fun game to watch, not just as an Atlanta fan, but just in general, especially after watching like the Bizarro World game from the night before with the Eagles and the Giants, which was just a really strange game. And then transitioning from that into that second game on Monday night, which was just painful to watch because nobody wanted to score points. It was like you'd get into position to score and then turn it over or get a blocked field goal or something really silly would happen. That was a well-played game with the Eagles and the Falcons. I was impressed by both teams somewhat. Sam Bradford didn't get hurt. That's a positive sign.
Not yet.
You know, I think fans of both teams had something positive to take away from that. Obviously, everybody in Philadelphia, they expected to win that game. But just like with Buffalo, Atlanta is not an easy place to go and win. I mean, they show Matt Ryan's home record. It's great. It's not just good, it's great.
And it pointed out what was Mike Smith doing with that defense. Because it really highlighted, as you said, even if you're not as talented on defense, what you can do is you can always bust your ass and just be aggressive and see what happens from there, because you can just force somebody into making mistakes just by being aggressive, even if you're not that talented. Just use your speed and do something out there to make the offense kind of hesitate and go, uh-oh, I got to maybe adjust here. Atlanta, the last couple of years, their defense was so bland and so not able to get after the quarterback. The quarterbacks that came into Atlanta didn't have to fear for anything. They just stood back there and drank some tea and had some crumpets and took their time and did whatever they wanted to do. So it's a great sign. Check the kettle. So it's a great sign for Falcons fans that at least there's going to be some more hustle. You would hope that would last throughout the entire season, that at least they're going to actually get after it and see if they can force the other team into mistakes. And it worked for a half. Now, you said, in the second half, Philadelphia got into their rhythm and took over.
Yeah, it doesn't help that you come out from halftime up 20-3 and promptly get the ball and throw a pick.
Mm.
Like, deep in your own territory. When Atlanta's getting that second half kickoff thinking, all right, we've got our foot on their throats. We could take this thing down and score. Nobody is stopping Julio Jones. I mean, Julio Jones in that first half was just a monster. And I loved what they were doing with him.
Put you over here, over to the right, to the left, in the slot, in the middle.
It was Kyle Shanahan, you know, and his dad. We're not their biggest fans, you know, of them and their Shanahanigans, I guess would be the word for it. thank you. Do you like that one?
that's good.
Thank you. But as an OC, he's just fine. And, yeah, they Tevin Coleman looked good running the ball. I mean, I liked what I saw out of that team moving the ball, and then all of a sudden I'm like, wow, what team is this? You know, what team am I watching? And then in the second half, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember these guys. But then they still somehow managed to find a way to win. Mike Smith must have crept onto the sidelines for that third down call on third and one. Oh, I'm so used. Oh, you've got one of the best receivers in football. Find a way to get the ball into that guy's hands on a quick something or other. Don't try to give a rookie running back the ball when they know that's what you're going to try to do. But whatever, they punted, and then they got the pick, and it was and everything was fine. But best game I watched all weekend was definitely that one.
Your offense should look awesome with that kind of talent, with Julio Jones and Roddy White looked rejuvenated, and Matty Ice and Tevin Coleman looked pretty good. So I'll give Kyle Shanahan his credit and give him his due. His offense looked awesome. It should look awesome with that personnel, but a lot of people have that type of personnel and do not look awesome. So he did it. The offense looked very good. The defense had energy for one night, and they got a big victory. Let's ignore that throw that went completely through Jordan Matthews' hands for the game-winning interception, that there was nobody near him, that Philly could have continued to drive and maybe won the game themselves. Let's just ignore that for one night.
Well, I mean, it's all part of the game. You got to have you get the good bounces and the bad bounces, and but as you know, Philly fans should not be all up in arms. I mean, they lost in a tough place play anyways. Atlanta was clearly game. I mean, that in that first, even the announcers, you know, even Gruden and Tirico were like, "Hey, if we told you the score this half the half was going to be 20-3, I don't think we would have had Atlanta." You know, that was exactly right. If you would have told me, if I would have told you, yeah, you know, it's going to be 20-3 at halftime, you would also have been like, "Wow, yeah, Atlanta's defense, man, ooh, they're stinking."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So impressive. I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about that Sunday night debacle.
it was something to watch. They know what they're doing. I tell you, the NFL knows exactly what they're doing. When you put the NFC East on primetime television, you know you're getting a lot of points scored because nobody can cover anybody in that entire division.
No. And then just that whole sequence at the end of the game was rough. I mean, and then drama. Oh, okay, they told Rashad Jennings, Eli, don't tell him not to score. And then you're trying to run the clock, but then you throw the ball out of the back of the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, not Dallas, the smartest play call.
Dallas gets the ball back, and Tony Romo didn't look great for most of the game. But you know, this was the guy, I picked him as my MVP last year. And on that last drive, they were so cool, so calm, so collected. That drive ended with a touchdown, so they didn't need a field goal, but they needed that touchdown. It really reminded me, and I hate to go back to this, it reminded me of that drive that Brady had at the end of that first Super Bowl they won against the Rams. You know, where he's just finding Kevin Falk and just dumping the ball off, and then all of a sudden you've got Romo back there. He's just taking what that defense is giving him. He's just dumping
Lance
it off to
Dunbar.
Dunbar, getting it to Dunbar. Yeah, the revelation in Lance Dunbar all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And no Dez Bryant for most of that game, and the Giants just let him have everything they wanted. I do not understand.
And defense sucks, I'm sorry.
I do not understand the bend, don't break defense the teams play at the end of the game. It's like, you got the lead by playing defense. Just play these guys straight up. They're so worried about somebody getting behind them that they let them have everything in front of them. Even on that touchdown throw, the linebacker's like halfway standing in the end zone. Jason Witten's just standing on the goal line. It was easy. You should not win that easy.
You shouldn't win when the quarterback drops the snap on the game-winning touchdown throw. That should be, all right, let's go eat. Let's go get him. Nope.
I mean, yeah, you don't see too many teams won with the Cowboys. They had 3 turnovers. They were -3 and won the game.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And I was feeling really
smart. NFC East football, baby.
I was feeling really smart because I had the Giants as an upset winner. I still ended up winning the pick.
Yeah.
But I was feeling pretty good. I was like, oh, I had the Rams as an upset winner this weekend, and I've got this one. Oh, this is all starting to come home. And I still won the pick, so I got to feel good about that I at least got to that part. But I was like, you know, the Giants, I had some hope for them, being that I picked them to win that. Just every team in that division could finish 8-8 for all I could say, except for the Redskins. They take
yes.
that back.
Oh, and
but between Philly, Dallas, I guess even though the Eagles lost, just from 1 week, it feels like a Cowboys-Eagles sort of, they're going to be the ones button heads, because if the Giants play that stupid, hey, we have our dumbest team in football candidate already.
And that would
be dumb.
Oh, the Giants. Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you know,
a game like that on the road, you got to win that game.
I'm not with the people picking apart the decision making on the goal line for the Giants, and they should have ran more clock. They should have did this and did that. You know what they should have done? Tony Romo on the game winning drive. That's what they should have done.
Well, no, the problem I have though is they give him the ball. If Eli just takes a sack or takes a knee, do whatever you want to do. you run 40 more seconds off that clock, that drive at the end of the game looks a lot different if it starts at 45 seconds than it does at a minute and a half.
You don't think the Giants would have
the touchdown with they had no timeouts.
You don't think the Giants defense would have allowed Tony Romo to go over the top and beat him anyway, even if they ran that extra 40 seconds off?
I mean, possibly, but you got to use the clock has to be your friend at some point. Because obviously your defense isn't.
No, it's not. You know. I guess that's my deal, is that play some damn defense. Seriously, just play a little.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah. That's why you and I always preach that about the overtime rule. Oh, it's not fair. Both teams didn't get the ball. Go stop somebody.
Go stop them. Shut the fuck up and go stop them. Yeah.
That's right. You lost the the game was determined because we lost the coin toss. You might as well just flip the coin to determine the winner. No, go play some D.
Yeah.
Make a tackle. Strip a guy. Get a pick. Go actually force a punt. Oh, my God.
Now, Dallas might be in some trouble now with Dez Bryant, with whatever this injury is. I'm not even going to quote the injury because we got Dr. Jerry Jones is back on the case, determining that he's out 4 to 6 weeks with whatever this is, although nobody...
Everybody else is saying eight. I love
right.
that.
Nobody's he's confirming this 4 to 6.
Everybody else says eight.
Right. So whatever the injury happens to be, and however long he happens to be out, I want to be... advocate for Terrence Williams stepping up and being the man, but in this particular game, he didn't look very good. Dez went out with dehydration in the first half before he got this injury, and Romo tried to connect with Terrence Williams, and he dropped it twice. So I don't think the Cowboys are in very good shape as far as however long Dez Bryant is out. I think they're going to really miss him. He's obviously one of the two or three best receivers in all of football, and I think this is actually going to set them back a little bit. I'm looking for them to kind of suffer a little bit because we saw what their defense, the Cowboys' defense, can do, and that is not much because it's the NFC East. Nobody can do much in that division. So when they get in a situation where you don't have Eli Manning throwing out of the back of the end zone, you have a quarterback in a running game that actually knows what they're doing, I think the Cowboys are going to struggle to keep up with those kind of points being scored, and I think they might be in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, well, and if you're going to endure an ugly stretch, at least they're in a division with a lot of parity. You know, they're not in a top-heavy division.
That's true.
They could emerge from week 8, 3-5, and still go on a run and make the playoffs. It's just because it's that up in the air in that division. I don't think there's a dominant team that you just look at and go, yep, that, you know, they're the ones. Yeah, those guys are going to win. This isn't like the AFC South.
Right. The season.
Any other games jump out at you? Or?
The season starts on last Thursday night before a minute of football has been played. One of the first images of the new season that you see on NBC is Ben Roethlisberger pointing to his helmet and looking back at his coaches and with his hands up in the air like, I got nothing. I can't hear nothing. I got nothing here. Before the damn season's even begun, the Patriots are already cheating and fucking up the equipment. And, of course, the NFL comes out and says, well, no, it was a general problem. Everybody had the issue. And you know the reason that the NFL does that is because they don't want everybody saying the Patriots are cheaters and you guys don't do anything about it because they know that's what everyone's going to say. If you don't come out and back up the Patriots' claim, then everyone's just going to say cheater, 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 and put this black cloud over the entire season, which it might be there anyway.
Because then it comes out that these problems only happened when the Steelers were on offense.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's just a coincidence, though.
Things that make you go, hmm.
Yeah. And that was in our primetime starting season push.
It was.
One of the most stunning things for me over the weekend was all those 3-point spreads and nary a push.
One of those weeks. And so this week it'll probably be a bunch of 3-point spreads and it'll be 3 pushes. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
Let's see what other got any of the game other games that I watched. I think we covered all the ones that I actually got a chance to watch. So anything else that stood out to you?
Yeah, I'm not trying to pile on here, but other than being gifted a pick six, the Lions got whipped.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I like San Diego, and you know, I'm just so worried about Detroit. I just don't know what to make of that team. But to go out to San Diego and give up 33, it'll be interesting to me because that was another one of those that we really differed on our view of a team, and for us that was the Lions, and you know, where I was dead wrong about Baltimore, I felt like, yeah, maybe I was a little vindicated about Detroit. Because, I thought they were going to go out to San Diego and lose that game. And early on, they competed, and they ended up being a close score. But I don't think the score was really the true indicator of the overall game. San Diego generally handled them pretty easy.
That's another one of those where it's a tough place to play. It's a solid team, as I've said the entire time. Chargers are not slouches, so I'm not worried yet. But yes, I was kind of surprised to see that score. I did not think the Lions' defense was going to give up 33 to just about anyone this year. I think their defense, which used to be pretty bad, has been much improved the last couple of years, and I didn't think they were capable of something like that, but. It was one of those bad days for them. There's no doubt about that.
And we get to make a pick.
Indeed, we do. We have Thursday night action coming up tomorrow night. It's AFC West football, where you just talked about Peyton Manning and all the struggles that he's had, and now the Denver Broncos go on the road to historically a very tough place to play. Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City as they take on Alex Smith and the Chiefs. Denver's C.J. Anderson, the running back, has ankle and toe issues. He's listed as questionable, but from what I've been reading, he's expected to play. Kansas City, I believe, had 14 people listed on their injury report, all probable. So I guess
they're good. Hey, is that guy going to play?
Probably.
Yeah. So I guess they're all good. That's good enough for me.
It is the cop-out pussy line. The Chiefs are a 3-point home favorite against the Broncos, and I have a pretty good feeling who you're going to pick.
Yeah, you know, and I tend to be the contrarian when it comes to picks. Like, when everything points to a certain team, I go the other way. You know that I do that. I do that all the time. Because you've got everything here is lined up for the Chiefs. They've got they're the home team and a tough place to play on the short week, which always benefits on those Thursday night games, always benefits the home team if they're worth anything. Peyton Manning, it looks done. So like you said, the running back is nicked up. Kansas City pretty much dominated Houston in that first game. So everything lines up for the Chiefs. And I'm taking them anyways, damn it. I'm taking the Chiefs. I'm not even going to go against what I would normally say is, hey, wait a minute. So you're all for the Chiefs. No, I love the Chiefs tomorrow night. I think this, you know, every year we're waiting for them to kind of, we're going to rise up, guys. We're finally going to get the Broncos. We're gonna get some respectability. I think this is going to be a whooping tomorrow night.
Chiefs, I, of course, have the Broncos making one last ride and Peyton Manning making one last stand and winning the AFC West somehow, some way this season. So you would think this game would be very big going towards that, going into Kansas City and getting a big road victory. And I'm sure Denver will be very motivated to go in and do that, coming off a not-so-impressive home victory where Peyton Manning, everyone's pretty much talking about how bad Peyton Manning looks. It's the talk of the talk shows.
Yeah.
So he's going to come out. He's going to be fired up. He's going to be ready to go. And the Chiefs are going to be waiting for him, and they're going to be rushing those disgusting pass rushers that they have. Derek Johnson out of the linebacker spot blitzing and everyone else. And they're going to bust him in the fucking mouth. And so, unfortunately, I'm going to have to concur and take the Chiefs to beat them and cover the three and beat them badly. The Broncos do not look like a team that can compete right now with any kind of quality outfit, and that is indeed a quality outfit. More on our after show when we come back. All right, into our VIP after show portion of the program. I think I started the music a hair too late. I was waiting for it to swell up right at the end of the hour, and it didn't. So I think we went off the air with some dead air, but that's okay.
It's all right. Nobody's listening anyway. How the hell with it? Nobody's listening anyway. Yeah, you're kind of on the right point there, though. This is not necessary. If Denver had lost last week to Baltimore, this would feel more like a funeral march. But they go to Arrowhead, they lose, they're 1-1. They lost against a tough division opponent in a tough place to play anyway. I don't think Denver takes anything away from this and goes, oh, that's it, you know, we're torpedoed. We're sunk. So They can go out there and get their doors blown off, and at the end of the day, you're still 1-1. You know, you don't have to start hearing about whatever, you know, all the stupid statistics you hear. You know, as the losses are piling up, this is just a bad spot for them tomorrow night. This is a tough spot.
Yeah, they're going to be desperate, but this is the wrong team to be desperate against because that defense is so stout.
Right.
They're going to pretty much be. That's exactly what Peyton Manning hates as well, is even if it, at the height of his powers, is a physical, in your face, punch you in the mouth type of defense that the Chiefs have. So this is pretty much exactly what he doesn't need at this stage of his career and of his season right now. So yeah, it looks for all the world like Chiefs squish.
Yeah, the Broncos are actually right now. They need a green button to roll into town. They need the Browns, Jags. You know, they need some, but they really, really need a easy win because they beat Baltimore. By no means was that easy. I mean, Joe Flacco was at the goal line basically throwing balls into the end zone trying to win that game. Actually, had one to the corner that somebody just broke up. He had Steve Smith wide open, and a guy just happens to get a tip ball. And otherwise, they score the game-winning touchdown right there. So, yeah, they covered that six. What was it, four? Was it four-point spread? Because it ended up being a six-point win. Was it 19-13, something like that? Baltimore was right there. So it wasn't easy. And now they're going to Kansas City? Oh, boy. So one thing I do need, because I'm looking a little bit more vindicated on right now, and I kind of knocked myself, so I got to harken back to a little baseball talk here for a moment. So we're in the after show, we can do that. Going back to our mid-season sort of talk that we had in baseball, I had a team picked to kind of rise up from the ashes and make a division run, and then a couple weeks later made fun of myself for picking that team because they played like crap in that two-week span. I want to give some props to myself for this Texas Rangers squad.
Out of nowhere.
I saw something. We were talking about teams that we thought could make a run. We both loved the Blue Jays with all the moves that they had made. And all those teams, just reading the tea leaves, I just kind of pulled out of my ass. I said, one team I'm keeping my eye on here I think could make a run in a weak division is Texas. And lo and behold, they're now sitting a full game and a half ahead of the Astros. And, what, month and a half ago, they were 8 games out.
It's unbelievable sometimes the way baseball, with the, of course, being as opposite to the NFL as you can get with 162 games instead of 16, that there's such a crazy rhythm to it. There's things that happen that you – teams that come out of nowhere that you had dead and buried 2 months ago, you go, wait a minute, they're still around? The Twins are still hanging around. I don't know how that's happening.
Just lingering. They're like the herpes. Yeah. Just won't go away.
I hope that's not from personal experience that you made that comparison.
No,
but,
not at all.
Okay. But yeah, that's how the rhythm is working, and of course the Astros, who kind of like the Cubs, everyone said, well, we know they're coming, we know they have a great young core, and we know they're going to be contenders for a long time, but we don't quite know if this is the year for them. And they were on top for the last couple of months. They were on top of the AL West, and now maybe it's starting to catch up to them a little bit, and as they kind of choke under the pressure a little bit, unfortunately. And there the Rangers are, maybe poised to actually win the division after all of that.
Yeah, the Rangers tonight went out, because they're playing Houston head-to-head right now, and Houston had Dallas Keuchel out there tonight, by far their best pitcher.
Right.
And the Rangers had hung 9 on him by the time he got pulled.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was just an absolute just throttling that the Rangers were putting on. It was at Texas, and you could just, like, you could feel the crowd was popping, and you really felt like you were watching. I was watching that game tonight. You felt like you were really watching two teams kind of heading to different, the ship's passing in the night, so to speak, you know. just two teams headed in totally different directions, and again, we go through all of this, and who's just kind of lurking there like 4 games out is the Angels. So you never know with baseball. Because a 3-game lead or a 4-game lead is nothing with 20 games to go. Sounds like a lot, because you realize the math has got to work out a certain way, and a team needs to lose some. But all you need to do, because you play so many games head-to-head, especially interdivisional games, all you need to do is go and sweep one of your division rivals, and you're, boom, you're right back in this thing.
Rangers right back in this thing and on top by 1.5 games, like you said, despite... they still have a negative run differential on the season, our favorite baseball stat.
It's amazing. -13. So bad early.
Right.
So that's a tough one for baseball, because their record since the All-Star break, I guarantee you, with their record since the All-Star break, their run differential, they've put a huge dent in that since the All-Star break.
Yeah, I'm sure they have.
Because they're not running Chi-Chi Gonzalez or whoever the hell it is, or any of these guys out there in Yahoo. Is it Chi-Chi Rodriguez?
No, that wrong guy. That's the golfer.
That's the golfer. Because whoever is Chi-Chi Gonzalez, that's the guy. I was right the first time. Yeah, what they need him to do is go out there and do the little sword thing every time he gets a strikeout.
Yeah! Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah! Ha, ha! Yeah. It'd be funny if he did that. Every time I hear his name, I expect him to break something out. Like, of course, the Cardinals still running away with the Central. Although the Pirates hanging around. They're only 4 back.
Hanging around. Cubs are not going to win the division, but they are so far clear. They're going to at least be in the play-in game, you got to figure. I mean, they're like 7 up.
Right.
So you figure they're probably going to Pittsburgh play-in game, although there's a chance they could go to St. Louis for the play-in game. Neither spot is enviable. The Cubs have hung with both of those teams. Early in the season, they did not really play well against either one of those squads, but lately they've been better. I mean, they went to St. Louis and should have swept the Cardinals and ended up blowing a really big lead late in one of those games, ended up taking 2 out of 3. But they don't look intimidated now against the better teams like they did earlier in the season. So that's shaping up. At least I'll get to watch one meaningful Cubs game this year. One.
I've never seen a team of rookies that look as much like veterans as that Cubs team does. Like, Chris Bryant steps up and doesn't give a damn and just swats it out of the park, and Kyle Schwarber steps up and doesn't give a damn and swats it out of the park, and Addison Russell is playing some of the best shortstop in all of baseball, and he's only 21 years old. I mean, this group of rookies is unreal. The way that they've played all year and continue to play. Most rookies pull a Jock Peterson at this point and just completely dissolve and turn into water right before your eyes. These guys keep going. This is quite impressive. Yeah, and, of course, as a Cubs fan, it's got to make you feel completely over the moon about the future.
Oh, absolutely. Just knowing, we've talked about this before, but just knowing that the team that I'm looking at can add parts. Just knowing that some of these guys in the lineup, they're just not going to be there. Some of these guys in the rotation they're going. I have the confidence that they're actually going to jettison bad players and replace them with better ones. It's like, what a concept, right?
Wow.
I know. It's just amazing. It's just so weird for me, being a lifelong Cubs fan, that they're actually going to upgrade. Wow. They're actually going to keep the core players in place, not trade them all away for middle relievers, and they're actually going. They have a plan. And it just, the thing that's also completely stunning to me, having you and I been in American League, you know, money, fantasy baseball, and American League only, so we know these AL players, is every time I watch Jake Arrieta pitch, I'm just, like, confused. I'm like, the ultimate post-hype player, and, you know, got a no decision tonight, but if he could have held on and gotten the win, that would have been his 20th win tonight.
Yeah. That happens. Some guys do not blossom when you expect them to. It just, things don't go the way they're supposed to all the time. You bring up a kid that's not ready, and he gets to 24, 25, 26 years old, and he still isn't doing it for you, and you decide to cut bait. Very often, they go somewhere else, they figure it out, and they blossom. This is not new. This happens. The post-hype sleeper, as you just said. And this is absolutely what happened with Jake Arrieta. He just wasn't getting it together for Baltimore for whatever reason. He got the change of scenery. It always helps to go to the National League from the American. I'm sure that's a factor in it as well. But the biggest factor, of course, is he's just great. He's just a better pitcher than he used to be. He grew up. He got his stuff together, his pitching stuff and his mental stuff. And it's all clicking for him right now. It just happens that way sometimes.
Did you watch the no-hitter?
Part of it, yes, because I was so sure of the under in that game,
yeah,
which was, I think, like 6 or whatever, because of that twilight starting time at Dodger Stadium, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. Of course, that's 5 in the afternoon Pacific time. So I've always, as a old terrible bettor, I've always taken notice of those Dodger Stadium Sunday night games when they started at 5 o'clock. That there's something about that twilight. There's something about the shadows there. I was like, okay, no one scored. Whatever the pitching matchup was, I forget who Arrieta was going against. It had to be either Kershaw or Greinke, I think.
No, I don't think it was either one of them in that game.
Oh, okay.
Because that would have made that even more memorable.
Well, whoever it was, I was as sure as you could possibly be about the under just because of the twilight. And Chris Bryant hit that 2-run homer, and that was it. That was the end of scoring for the entire night.
That was the game. That's right. That's the ball game. Well, it was interesting what they were talking about, because obviously you're going in, you've got a no-hitter, so all the focus the latter innings of that game is they're talking about Arrieta and the sideline reporter. But what they said was basically, you know, the information that they got from him was that when he was in Baltimore, the pitching coaches in Baltimore tried to basically, like, change his arm slot.
Okay.
You know, they tried to take him from being more of like a 3-quarter kind of delivery to more of an over-the-top delivery. And then when he went to the Cubs, he was like, hey, they messed me up. And they're like, well, you know what, just go back to doing what you do. You know, and obviously that's what worked. And it helped. But you would think, though, why does it – you just imagine the tinkering that goes on. It's like, this guy was a very highly touted prospect. I mean, we remember he was an A-grade prospect. He was a very sought-after prospect in that system in Baltimore, probably doing what he's doing now. And then he gets to the big leagues. He gets – some pitching coach gets their hands on him, thinks they're going to improve him or change him, and you get into a guy's mind or you change his mechanics and – it's amazing. All right. Just going back to what you were good at. And, oh, wow, look, there's results.
All right, kid, I don't know what you think you were doing down there in the minors, but you're in the big leagues now. I'm going to show you what you need to be doing. Yeah, right. There's guys like that in a lot of different organizations. When you say that, I think of Chris Sale with the White Sox and how if he came up in a different system, he might have not been what he has become, because somebody might have looked at his mechanics and said, what is that over across your body? No, 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 no. We're not,
because you expect his arm to just come off one day.
yeah, you can't do that. You're going to get hurt. We got to do something about that. So it just depends on pretty much what organization you come up in. Some of them are very overbearing in that respect and control freaks, and others kind of let you do what you do and have the results that you're going to have.
Yeah, but think about it this way, though. I mean, you know, we played minimal amounts of sports, and you know, with throwing balls and things like that. Your motion develops over time. Your throwing motion, you know, and you don't make it into a motion that hurts, you know,
right,
or that's going to cause you to have injury. You throw from a position that feels like you can get the most juice on a ball comfortably. And you have to wonder if all of the tinkering that goes on can lend to some of these injuries. Changing a guy's
mechanics.
I'm sure
it does.
Because now the mind starts to take over. Because now you're thinking about, I've got to hit a different arm slot. Well, if that's not comfortable for you, but you're doing it because that's what your coaches are telling you to do, I bet you that's where some of these injuries are coming from.
No, it's absolutely. And it just physically, not even mentally, but just the physical aspects of what you're trying to do with your elbow, the whole idea of throwing that hard from that distance is so unnatural, and then you change your mechanic to something that you haven't done with that arm all these years growing up, all through your teenage years, college years. This is something completely new. I'm sure there are some tendons and whatnot inside your elbow going, hey, what's going on? What are you doing? Hey, I'm not supposed to go back there.
Your muscle memory. If you start messing with the muscle memory, that's not a good thing. So look at all the, we've got some depth tonight here on the show. We're talking, you know, science.
As much science as we can muster anyway.
That's about as good as it gets from us.
Yes. Continuing to look at the baseball standings, I still don't know how the New York Mets are doing what they're doing. I thought they would have fallen off months ago.
Well, that was the Nationals that did the falling off.
Oh, that was painful to watch. That three-game series.
Yeah.
Oh. Last week at home against the Mets where they just collapsed over and over. Matt Williams was going through Groundhog Day. He just woke up and, oh, here's another day. Let's find a way to blow this game. And, oh, here's another day. Let's find a way to get the bullpen to blow this one. And everything he did, he's going to get fired at the end of the year. At least I think he will. He probably deserves it. But at the same time, every guy he put in just bent over and took it. There's nothing he could do.
Is that the manager's fault, really?
That particularly, no. That particular series, no. That's because everyone he put in every leverage situation, just gave up the ass. Just gave it up. The store and Papelbon, everybody behind him, those two guys, it didn't matter who you put in. It didn't matter what inning you put them in. They gave it up. And that's what gets you your manager fired, is when you do that. So, you know, they knew what they were doing when they were giving it up, I'm sure.
Yeah, because that makes, if all your moves just are bad, they just look bad like that because your guys are just being terrible, that makes you look bad. Like, you don't know how to manage.
Oh, exactly.
But, like you said, everybody he put in was terrible.
Didn't matter.
Normally
who it
reliable
was.
Guys, by the way. These aren't just busters that they're throwing out there. That's got to be between, oh, man, them and the Red Sox. Oh, my God, disappointment.
Oh, man. Yeah, that team.
Well, that was my
division
Mariners
champ pick, I believe.
Yeah, I've given up on thinking of the Mariners as a disappointment because this is just what they do.
Right.
The Seattle Mariners are like the Houston Texans preseason Memorial Award team. We always think highly because they make the right moves, and on paper, it always looks as they've got that ballpark and they've got that pitching staff, and they just get that offense going. They got Robinson Cano another extra year now, and Nelson Cruz. We've been falling into this Mariners trap, and that's Groundhog Day. That's like Groundhog Year because it's the same thing with that team every year. They look great. I bet you if you were to play them in a video game, they'd be great.
Oh, sure. On paper, with all the ratings,
You can't hit their pitchers, and they have good hitters.
Yeah.
Well, that's how you win baseball games, right? You pitch good, and you hit
normally.
Good.
That's supposed to be how it works, yeah.
That's right.
And I'm interested to see if this run differential thing actually comes through in this respect. There's only two teams that are in triple digits on the positive in run differential, and one's in the American League and one's in the National. And so I want to see if that's going to actually work out for them to get to the World Series. Will it actually be the St. Louis Cardinals against the Toronto Blue Jays? Will that actually come to fruition? If it does, that's a hell of a series.
That would be an exciting series because naturally as a Cubs fan, I'd have to root for the Toronto Blue Jays by default. I am contractually obligated as a Cubs fan to root for anybody who plays the Cardinals ever, unless it helps the Cubs.
801 runs scored by Toronto this year.
Wow.
Second place, the New York Yankees, 703. Almost 100 runs in backup.
They just clobbered
with crazy.
I mean, and they scored. They put up another 10 spot tonight.
Oh.
Well, last I saw, they were winning like 10 to 1.
Well, you know what to do in fantasy next year, folks. Draft the entire Blue Jays lineup. And go from there.
Yeah, that would be wise, don't you think?
I would think so. And I like them. I would do that anyway. I'm a big fan of Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, of course, Troy Tulowitzki now, the mid-season addition. I'm big fans of them anyway, but then looking at these numbers make me think, oh, my God, you got to have, like, everybody in that lineup. Every round of a fantasy draft, just Blue Jay, Blue Jay, Blue Jay.
Yeah, I overestimated. I'm sorry. I do have to apologize about the Blue Jays tonight. They only scored 9 runs. It was 9-1.
Oh,
and
they
David
came
Price
up short.
Racked up another win, I believe. 9-1 tonight, yeah. Oh, it's nice. The Cubbies won in extras tonight. I was wondering about the final of that game because it was 2-2 in the 11th. The last I had gotten an update on that game. So, and the Rangers ended up winning 14-3 over Houston.
Well, that's a way to put a capper on that series. I think that's the
No,
or it might be a 4-gamer. I think they come back tomorrow night, actually.
Yeah, you just want to talk about this ripping some guys. So, yeah, the Cubs actually were up 2-1 going into the eighth inning of their game. Gave up a tying run. And somehow, let me see here. Yeah, they actually came up with the winning run in the 12th inning tonight. So they got it done.
There you go. For fantasy football for week one, I got a mixed bag for me. I don't know how you what turned out for you.
I split the two games. I lost in our league with the football fan Rush Radio folks, and then in my work league I won. Although I had a 35-point lead going into Monday night, and then the other guy I only had one player, but it was Julio Jones.
That's a good player to have.
He scored 27 points, and if he had gotten one more big gainer or if he had gotten into the end zone in that second half, I would have watched my entire lead just evaporate thanks to one guy.
Yeah.
So ended up winning that game, barely hung on, scored a lot of points on my end. But then in our league, I mean, we already knew after that Thursday night, after I had gone up against Gronk and Antonio Brown, that I was fighting an uphill battle.
Right.
So, yeah, that did not go so well. Scored points. I accumulated some points, which is always what you want to do when you lose, because the points do matter later on.
Yep, I split my two games as well between my money league and our football fan Rush Radio league. And I discussed my theory on drafting Tom Brady in the Money League and then coming back a few rounds later with Cam Newton because I said, hey, Cam is solid. He's always his own goal line back, and Tom sort of starts slow. So I'm not afraid to play Cam Newton and let Tom Brady sort of catch up and get back on track.
Oops.
So that performance on last Thursday night, the best quarterback performance of the week by any quarterback was for my bench.
Ouch.
And I lost that money game matchup because the other guy had Matt Ryan and Julio Jones.
Now that's lethal.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I mean, if you've got the wherewithal to sit through a draft and take Julio Jones, you're not getting him late second round. So you've got to hope you get him, because I don't necessarily know if you draft Julio in the first round, but he's a guy you can take at 12 or 13. You know? So if you make that running back pick, I assume, at number one, you know, then you can get Julio Jones. Because Matt Ryan, there's a handful of quarterbacks that are going to come off the board before him. He's sort of undervalued as a fantasy prospect for some reason, even though he puts up pretty huge numbers. But he's an easy guy to get later, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But you really got to have a draft strategy to get that to happen. Unless it just auto picks it for you, and then that's why it's so hard for me to even get all that broken up about losing in the football fan rush radio thing. It's like, yeah, it hurts to lose to an auto pick team, but then it also doesn't hurt because I know that the other person did nothing.
Right.
Right. At that point, it's random chance. I got beat. My team, I put them out there, I drafted them, I moved things around to make it happen, and it didn't work out. The other team auto-picked well. Hey, good job. You auto-picked
all those
well.
All those other teams were basically playing against the computer.
Right.
You know, like,
think about
like
that.
Madden, you're
you
playing
and
against
I,
the computer.
If you and I had played each other in week one, you would have had all other of the eight teams just on auto-pick playing against each other. How do you even talk shit at that point?
I don't know.
Man, you're going down this week. I auto-picked better than you. Not only that, my draft slot was randomly generated, too. So
right.
If you had gotten my slot, you'd have my team. Ha!
That's why I don't feel that great about the win that I got in the Football Fantasy Rush League. Because not only did my opponent, of course, auto-pick, but then
they left dead players on the roster.
He started Le'Veon Bell this week.
Yeah, that's a
so I got to play against a suspended guy. So,
yeah.
The fact that I won that, don't feel too great about it. But a win's a win.
Usually in like the Friends and Family League that you and I usually do every year, which we didn't do this year, you don't start seeing the dead teams until, you know, week 7, week 8.
Right.
You know, people just know they're out of it, and they just don't give a shit. It's like, fine, whatever. Everybody's got stuff going on. They forget to do it. But, yeah, you should not have dead teams in week one. You just shouldn't.
Especially in this league where Cassandra assured us that it's going to be competitive and everybody's going to really want to win. And well, then you might want to know who is suspended on your team and who's not, you know?
Well,
just,
it was only
just saying.
One game suspension.
And that was the game that you played him.
Yeah, well, it's funny that I see that in my league at work, and then you in the league, in the Football Fan Rush League, we both picked up Terrence Williams.
I had Terrence Williams as like a sleeper draft pick before the season began. So everyone running to the wire when Dez Bryant gets hurt looking for Terrence Williams in those two leagues, at least I can say that. Nope, can't have him. I already got him.
It's funny because I actually get to work today, and people are complimenting me. Oh, you picked up Terrence Williams. Oh, yeah, that was a nice pickup. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. I was like ninth on waiver priority out of 10 teams. So anybody else could have had him.
Hey, nice pickup on that guy that I didn't claim.
Pretty much.
That's
There's
funny.
There's only one team, because I basically have, with the win and my points scored, I basically, you know, second place, doesn't really matter after week one. There's 5-1-0 teams, and there's 5-0-1 teams. That's all that really matters right now. But I had the second highest point total of the winning teams, so I'm in second place. Therefore, I'm in ninth place on the waiver wire, and I put in a claim for Terrence Williams, actually not expecting to get him, by the way.
Right. Yeah, you should.
And all he comes up this morning, and this is not a dead league. There were tons of other guys that got picked up.
Just no one remembered to put in a claim for that guy, I guess. I don't know.
Apparently everybody forgot that Dez Bryant was hurt. You'd think that the team that had Dez Bryant might have
Yeah.
put but whatever.
It should have been the first one.
I got him. So it, right now he's still riding my pine. But it's just sometimes it's keep away, too.
Exactly. You don't want to let that guy go to anybody else because he's going to be potentially very valuable.
Exactly. So the Theo Riddick is now off my team, although he found the end zone. Who didn't find the end zone against San Diego?
No.
Because so, Detroit gets the points.
That's true. I can't make fun of one of the other more popular, from looking at the two leagues that I'm in, one of the other more popular waiver wire pickups has been Marcus Mariota. I officially can't say a damn thing about that.
Don't. You can't make fun of him.
Cannot make fun of that
James
at
Bolton's
all.
Popular ad.
Oh, yeah. Can't say shit about that either, can I?
I will give credit to one of my coworkers in my work league. He actually picked up James Jones before the game.
He should in Wisconsin. That makes complete sense.
And had him on his bench.
Well, but at least he knew to pick him up. At least there was the number three receiver in your beloved Packers offense should not be on the waiver wire in a fantasy league in Wisconsin.
I was nowhere near as down on that signing as than you were because
yeah.
He was a good receiver here, and as a number three, perfectly fine with that signing. And I think I echoed that on the show last week. And you, though, and of course, he gets two touchdowns.
Of course. I guess I remembered all of the reasons why he got ran out of town, which is all the drops and all the bad plays.
His problem wasn't just the drops. They were like the soul-crushing drops, like the crippling drop, the wide open. If you catch this ball, there's nobody in front of you. But then James Jones would turn around and just make impossible catches. That was always the weird thing about him, was he'd make the stunning highlight reel catch, and then the ball right on the numbers or hits him right in stride, and he just drops it. He dropped one to start the third quarter of that Super Bowl against the Steelers, where Rodgers just hits him right on the hands, perfect stride. He has that defense completely just split in two if he just catches that ball, and it just lets the thing go through his hands. But then he has no problems in that game making like the circus catch. Never understood James Jones. So apparently, the higher the degree of difficulty, the more likely he catches the ball. Maybe he just needs the pressure, needs the concentration. You just can't make it too easy for this guy.
He's Black Lenny Dykstra.
Yeah.
And Lenny Dykstra couldn't catch the ball right at his face, but when it was time to go diving around in the outfield, he could come up with that one.
That's a very good football analogy, I mean, baseball analogy in football there.
I don't know where I came up with that.
Yeah, so the Houston Astros are looking at playing themselves out of the playoffs, basically.
Wow.
I mean, they're only a game ahead of Minnesota right now for the last wild card spot.
Out of the what?
Right now,
playoffs. Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Are you?
Yeah.
A little late on the trigger there.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it now, updated here. Yeah, the Cubs are 8 up in that wild card race.
That's done.
That's over. But we don't like to ever declare anything over. But considering what that's 140, there's only 17 games left, and you're 8.
That's pretty much over.
You'd almost have to lose them all, pretty much now, right?
Pretty much.
Because even if the Cubs just play 500 ball the rest of the way, the San Francisco Giants would have to win out.
Right, and that's not happening.
It's starting to look. It's starting to look bleak for those teams behind Pittsburgh and the Cubs.
Yeah, it's going to be
For the basically the Twins, the Angels, and even the Indians, go figure.
Yeah.
They're only 4 out. Did you see the thing last night with Cleveland and Kansas City?
No, I didn't, but I kind of read about it a little bit on the internet.
Yeah, someone from Kansas City hit a home run in Cleveland, and the guy set off the fireworks by accident.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. It's kind of, actually, I mean.
I think Deadspin said you had one job.
That would have been even better.
If we had what?
Followed that up by playing a little White Snake. That would have been even better.
A little Chuck Finley action there.
Yes, a little reference there for folks.
No, I think Deadspin had an article about it said, you had one job.
That's right.
Come on. That's the only thing you're supposed to be doing. They showed the picture of the guy that had his head in his hands like, oh, what have I done?
Yeah, but it was, come on. At least they got a fireworks show. Well, you're not getting it from the Indians.
I don't know. They're still in contention. They're still hanging around.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that at 72 and 72, they're still in contention.
It's still contention. But, hey, you keep adding all these wild card rounds, and that's what you're going to get. One of these days, you're going to get a 500 team or sub-500 team make the playoffs.
Eventually, yeah, look at football. We just both agree this one-game play-in game's just got to go.
It's shit. It's total shit.
I can understand football, you know. This baseball thing is just driving me nuts. And not because, and for folks listening to the show, this is not because I'm potentially looking at my team being one and done in 100. No, we've been on this for a while now. We just hate this. And it's getting to that time again, so we get to talk about how much we hate this.
That's right. We hate the one-game playoff. It's a complete stunt by Selig because he didn't know how to capture the excitement of the NFL playoffs, so he completely made this shit up. It's garbage.
Yeah, there's no way baseball, other than a game 7 or a game 5, should basically be one and done.
Right.
Or even a game 3. I told you, three game playoff. It's all they need.
Yeah, they might do that someday.
I'm telling you, I told you, three games, all three games at the first, the higher team at their home. That makes it easy, right? No
travel.
You
got to write Rob Manfred and give him your idea.
I'm telling you, three games, best of three, all on the road. You've got to make it hard. You've got to punish the second wild card team. You do. You've got to really make that team earn their chance. And this is like the play-in game for the tournament, just to get into the tournament, because this is basically what we're doing to these two teams.
Yes.
And, you know, generally that number one seeded wild card team would have won pretty much every other division except for the one they were in. That's basically the way it breaks down. I mean,
yeah,
like
usually.
Right now, the Pirates would be winning every division except the Central.
Right.
The Cubs would be in first place in every division but the Central. So
the Cubs are the third best team in the National League, and they're going to play a one-game playoff on the road.
Yeah, the Cubs are tied for the third best because them and the Dodgers have the same record. But everybody's like revering the Dodgers, right?
Right.
They have the same record as the Cubs.
Mm-hmm. And with not nearly as many rookies on their team.
No. And we just always forget about Pittsburgh. They're just there.
They're just always there. They're just there.
I forgot about them. I forgot about them in our preview show this year for the baseball preview. Man, there's a team in the Central I'm missing for that second place. Oh, yeah. Pittsburgh. Oh, yeah. Pittsburgh. They're
oh,
good.
Yeah. Those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And there they are again, just kind of lingering around.
Good, solid, and quiet, not too flashy, and they just kind of hang around.
Yeah, they just show up and do work.
Yeah. All right, our week 2 picks show, which night are we doing that?
It should be good for Saturday.
Okay.
I know how fond you are of Saturday pick shows, because that lets you do maximum research.
The only reason I would be available or willing to do Friday this particular week is because the wife is going to be doing something Friday night. So I would have the house to
Friday
myself. And
I am this Friday night.
All right, I'll probably wind up scheduling for Friday then, just because I'll have the house to myself and be able to do all I need to do and have no distractions or anybody ask me what they want for dinner or anything like that. So.
Yeah, my only distraction is if I get interrupted by my daughter.
Right.
Mid-show. That did not happen tonight, although she was probably still awake at 10 o'clock because I had actually just come down here from putting her to bed at about 9:40. She finally, I think, decided that she was staying in bed. So, Friday works for me.
We got lucky. No appearance by the boss of the show.
No.
But
no.
Probably will happen again sometime in the future.
Yeah, that's guaranteed.
All right. He's Jay. I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you for listening. Week 2 picks coming up live Friday night, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, and we will see you then.